Good morning. My name is Nick. I'm another one of the pastors on staff. I want to echo Kirk's welcome. It's good to be with you all this morning. This is a reading from the Gospel of Luke. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they went to the tomb, taking the spices they had prepared. And they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were perplexed about this, behold, two men stood by them in dazzling apparel. And as they were frightened and bowed their faces to the ground, the men said to them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you, while he was still in Galilee, that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and on the third day rise." And they remembered his words, and returning from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary the mother of James and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter rose and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen clothes by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened. Here ends the reading. Every time I read this story, and I've read it a few times over the last week, I'm struck by the angel's opening words. Why do you seek the living among the dead? It's a surprising and searching question, and it gets to the heart of what the resurrection is all about. The angels seem confused. Why do you seek someone alive in this place of death? Why did you bring burial spices? Don't you get it? Death is no longer the last thing. The angels realize that something new has happened. For the first time, the tombstone has been rolled away from the inside. The claim isn't that Jesus survived after death in some sense, or that he was even resuscitated from death, but that a whole new mode of bodily life has emerged. C.S. Lewis, he talks about the resurrection as the strangest story that's ever been told because it's something genuinely original, novel. It's history's greatest miracle. The funny thing is, though, when it first happened, it went almost completely unnoticed. I mean, of course, it kind of rocked the disciples' world, and the soldiers guarding the tomb, you know, they were kind of freaked out. There was no body in it. But it's not like, you know, senators living in Rome or merchants in Alexandria, Egypt, woke up that first Easter morning and discerned something different in the air. Life just went on as normal. In fact, apart from this pretty marginal corner of the Roman Empire, the resurrection didn't seem to change anything. History's greatest event went scarcely noticed. Well, it would not be the last time something big suffered small beginnings. Have you guys ever heard of Apple computers? This is a stupid question, I know. But if you lived in 1976, you probably wouldn't. The company was established in that year with very little fanfare to sell the Apple I personal computer kit. There it is. Imagine lining up around the corner for that. The start was so risky that one of the three founders of the company sold his share after the first 6 months. That was a very bad decision. Apple, of course, is now everywhere. It's the second largest publicly traded corporation in the world. Its estimated value is $414 billion. I know, because I looked it up on Wikipedia. It has to be true. Their famous products, they've literally changed the way we experience the world, for better or for worse. History has not been kind to Mr. Wayne. his share of the company sold for a mere $800 30 years ago would be worth $30 billion today. Sometimes life sucks. Apple's meteoric rise is amazing. It's amazing. It started so small and grew to be so large. Perhaps even more incredible, especially this time of the year, is Wilt Chamberlain's single-game NBA scoring record. That was supposed to be a joke. I guess that wasn't funny. All right. Well, he scored 100 points. 100 points. You know, that's 33 three-pointers and one. It was such a great event, and it went totally unnoticed. It was not televised. There were no major press networks there. The only photograph we have is just this one photograph. It's not even from the game. It's incredible. Well, we're not here to talk about NBA basketball, even if I'd like to. We're here to talk about the resurrection, what it means for our world and for our lives, to help us realize anew the wonder and significance of this event. I'm going to ask you guys to engage in a thought experiment of sorts with me and ask kind of the great hypothetical question, what if? What if Jesus didn't rise from the dead? What if the stone was in its place when the women arrived and the tomb was full? Or what if the disciples merely snatched Jesus' body and the religious authorities, who really did look for a body, found it? What if? How would our world look, and what would be lost in our personal lives? First, the world. It's hard to imagine what our world would look like. The resurrection vindicated Jesus' actions and his teachings. It established him in history for all time. It inspired his followers, who claim to be eyewitnesses of the resurrection, to start this new community, the church, and they tried to imitate his life and put his instruction into practice. Now hear me. His followers were not and are not today perfect. But because the things Jesus did were so profound, this movement changed the whole world. Changed the whole world. Jesus has done so much good through his people that we can take for granted the mark he's left on the world. Things like healthcare, universal literacy, higher education, all that, and much, much more can be traced to him. It's not always a straight shot, but Jesus' words reverberate across the centuries. If you want some examples, you can just watch this video.
Jesus once told his followers that whatever they did for those who were suffering, they were somehow doing it to him. And this idea generated a truly revolutionary ethic. The suffering of every single human being matters. 3 centuries after Jesus, one of his followers named Basil of Caesarea had an idea. What if alongside every new cathedral, Christians also built a place to care for the sick? This was the beginning of what came to be called hospice care, bringing healing and comfort for the diseased and impoverished. Hospices were the first charitable institutions the world had ever seen. Eventually, they came to be called hospitals. Many today still have Christian names. Not only did Jesus inspire a new way of treating people, he's also responsible for some of the most beautiful expressions of human creativity. He taught that God created everything, and that humankind's greatest task was to love God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. Discovering something true about the universe, whether it's the mysteries of the human body or the consonants of harmonies, is like thinking God's thoughts after him. Jesus transformed learning into an act of worship. Christian communities soon became the centers of intellectual life. They created the world's first universities in places like Oxford and Cambridge. Christian educators came to the New World to start colleges like Harvard, Princeton, and Yale. Schools all created to help people love God with all their mind. This vision also influenced the arts. Johann Sebastian Bach, George Friedrich Handel, Ludwig van Beethoven, they made beautiful music because they believed it drew them closer to God. It's the same with some of history's greatest painters, sculptors, and authors. All in all, Jesus' influence is simply inescapable. But what if his mark on the world disappeared? What if there were no hospitals, no Harvard? What if our favorite music had never been written, or stories never been told? What if?
What if, indeed, Jesus' resurrection has had an unparalleled impact on human history, and our world would be unrecognizable if it would not have happened? But so what, right? So what? If you follow Jesus, it's not mostly because of the good he's done abstractly. It's, or in some general historical sense, it's because of the particular difference he's made in your life. You know, the way he showed you hope, the way he showed you mercy. But what if he hadn't? What if Jesus didn't rise from the dead and the promise of the gospel died with him? What would our lives look like? Paul the Apostle, one of Jesus' kind of first risen followers, asked a very similar question. And here's how he answered. If Christ has not been raised, then our preaching is in vain, and your faith is in vain. If Christ has not been raised, your faith is futile, and you are still in your sins. No resurrection. There's no gospel, there's no good news for the world. Christian preaching is in vain. Some of you are thinking, preaching is in vain. Maybe so, but you get the point. Christian faith is futile. It's ineffective. It's unable to deliver its basic promise. We're still in our sins. Let me put it like this. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, we'd be stuck to our past. We'd be stuck to our past. You guys ever feel defined by what you're not? Defined by what you are not? The Scarlet Letter, it's a famous story about Hester Prynne, a woman living in 17th century Boston. She gives birth to an illegitimate child or out of wedlock, and she's forced to wear a scarlet-colored A on every one of her garments to reinforce and to tell everyone else that she is an adulteress. She lives every day under a cloud of sin and disgrace. The consequences of that one decision follow her for the rest of her life. At one point, her daughter, Pearl, says to her, "Mother, the sunshine does not love you. It runs away and hides itself because of something on your chest." It's the Scarlet Letter. It drives away the joy of sunshine. Now, that's obviously a little bit dramatic, but we all experience something similar. You know, we know the pain of being identified by the parts of ourselves that we don't like, the unbreakable habits, the inexcusable desires. We all live and suffer the consequences of decisions we wish we would not have made. Without the resurrection, our mistakes simply rename us, and we have no authority to resist their classification. But if Jesus did rise again, we're promised freedom and a new identity. By dying on the cross, Jesus shed his crimson blood to wash away our scarlet letters of shame. The resurrection vindicated, or it proved, that his offering on the cross, his death on behalf of the sins of the world, counted, or it met with divine approval. Sin has been forever defeated. Our record of wrongdoings was nailed to the cross with him. And the effect is that we're given a new name. Between our past and our present, there is an old wooden cross that forever divides who we were and who God says we are. We were stuck. We were all stuck in some way or another, and now we can look at what bound us and say, Jesus is risen. A new day has dawned, and your time is over. If Jesus didn't rise, we'd not only be stuck to the past, we'd be anxious about the future. Stuck to the past, anxious about the future. Peter, the guy from the story, he wrote a letter that's in the New Testament, and he said this: God the Father, because of his great mercy, has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection. A living hope. Jesus' resurrection promises us freedom. It's also a reason to hope. It's the most explosive sign of God's faithfulness that we could ever imagine. Think about it. The cross, it revealed the subterranean, or the hidden darkness in the human heart. God, he came into our midst, and we co-opted the power systems of our world, you know, religion and the state, to snuff him out. So what did God do? How did he respond? Did he turn himself from the world and abandon his project of restoration? No, he raised Jesus from the dead. He initiated our healing. He set a process in motion that cannot be undone. And this gives us, it gives us unpredictable hope for the world. If God can redeem a situation as forlorn as the cross, then what can't God turn around? Now, that's what the resurrection says. It says, look what God turned around. And we, in turn, we have this living hope, this unconquerable joy, because the same God who raised Jesus from the dead now lives in us. He enlivens our hearts and our minds, and he empowers us to look out into our future. And hear me, I know uncertainty remains in the day by day, of course, but brothers and sisters, we are guided by a signpost of inevitable joy. I realize, you know, there's a lot that wars against us. There's a lot to keep us up at night. And there's our health, which can never be predicted. There's dimming career prospects, financial insecurity, broken relationships, tail-spinning kids. And the resurrection, it's not a magic bullet for anxiety. However, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, if we didn't have this hope, there'd be no way we could confront our fears and empty them of power. But if he did, then we just saw the worst possible thing happen on Good Friday, and we saw God emerge victorious over it all. In the last book of The Lord of the Rings, Samwise Gamgee, he's one of the main characters, he falls asleep thinking everything has been lost. But he wakes up to discover that all of his friends are around him. It's this great surprise. He cries out, Gandalf, it's one of his friends, who's also a wizard. Gandalf, I thought you were dead. But then I thought I was dead. Is everything sad going to come untrue? If Jesus rose from the dead, the answer is yes. Everything sad is going to come untrue. Here's how the scene ends. It's too good, so I'm just going to have to quote it. "A great shadow has departed," explains Gandalf. And then he laughed, and the sound was like music. It fell upon Sam's ears like the echo of all the joys he had ever known. Sam cried out, "I feel like spring after winter, like sun on the leaves. I feel like the trumpets and the harps from all the songs I have ever heard." Spring after winter, sun on the leaves. If Jesus rose from the dead, everything sad is going to come untrue. And we don't have to be anxious about our future. And some of you might be saying, "I wish I could believe that." Or, "I wish that could become operative in my life." Well, let's revisit the question I raised at the beginning. Why do you seek the living among the dead? You know, the angel's words, they have such resonance because the question could just as easily be directed at us. Do we seek someone alive amongst the dead? If we want what Jesus has to offer, if we want a new identity, our living hope, we have to look for Jesus in the right place. And he is not in the tombs of religious history, nor is he an idea or a guide to occasionally follow. He's the risen Lord. And if you build your life around him, he will give you all these things and much, much more. Even if you're not certain the resurrection is true, don't you want it to be? Don't you want the sad things to come untrue and your past mistakes be washed away and your anxiety about the future disappear? Don't you want it to be? No, just start there. Start with what you want to be true. You know, Christianity, it's a famous saying, has not been tried and found wanting. It's been found difficult and not tried. So just try it, you know? If you're even unsure, just try it. There's another old saying, and I'm going to end with this. It's an old Christian saying, "The risen Christ makes life a perpetual feast." The risen Christ makes life a perpetual feast. Now, on the surface, that sounds like religious nonsense or sentimental, you know. Perpetual feast, what does that mean? Well, partly it's because life's dark side, you know, the suffering, the death, guilt, sickness, that's all still here, even though we claim that Jesus is risen from the dead. How is that possible? How can life be a perpetual feast when such darkness or starvation remains? Well, here's how. The darkness that remains, the pain, the suffering, it's not foreign or it's not alien to the giver of the feast, the crucified and risen Lord. Every objection, every no that we offer to protest the celebration is absorbed into his profound and all-encompassing yes. Death is swallowed up in victory. The sad things are coming untrue. Jesus is risen.